From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Our news reports are filled with stories of people who engage in racist behavior, but are then horrified at the idea of being called racist. Most of us are socialized to harbor racist ideas subconsciously, and those biases present themselves whether we realize it or not. Now, a new book written by an award-winning psychologist attempts to offer an evidence-based approach to fighting our own racial bias. Dolly Chugg is a Harvard-educated award-winning social psychologist at the New York University Stern School of Business, where she's an expert in the unconscious biases and unethical behavior of ordinary people. She joins me to discuss her new book. It's called The Person You Mean to Be: How Good People Fight Bias. Welcome to the program, Dolly.
Oh, Sonali, thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, we hear it so often that people, you know, will proclaim with absolute certainty, I am not a racist. Sometimes they'll go as far as saying, some of my best friends are Black people or brown people, etc. We tend to judge people by their actions, not by how they view themselves. How racist are most of us, maybe all of us? And is there a way to even measure that?
Yes. And I'm so glad you used the pronoun us, because it really is us, myself included. Sure. It's racism and a number of other biases as well. How racist are we? Well, according to one measure of unconscious or implicit bias, in the U.S., 75% of test takers, and this was a sample of millions of test takers at a website for the Implicit Association Test, or the IAT, 75% of test takers showed an implicit bias that favored whites over Blacks. And that overwhelming majority actually doesn't flip if you only focus on Black test takers. We even see amongst Black test takers, people who self-identify as Black, we don't see overwhelming majority, but we see a pretty even split between people who show an implicit bias favoring Blacks and whites. So racial bias
So you're saying that even say Black folks will implicitly value white folks over Black folks?
Some will, and knowing that helps us unpack this idea of unconscious racial bias, because one instinct a lot of us have is, doesn't it make sense that we would favor our own group? That just seems like the kind of thing evolution would support. But if that were true, then you would see every group showing that unconscious reflex. It's not what we see in the data. And this is a test that if anyone wants to see their own results, it's available to anybody for free anonymously at a research website, implicit.harvard.edu.
Right. This is definitely, we've heard of that implicit bias test. So how do we explain that? Because understanding why these are so widespread, such unconscious biases are so widespread, I imagine is the first step to addressing how one identifies them and then overcomes them. So why are we socialized to be racist?
That's right. So part of this is about how understanding how the human mind works, just the basic structure of thought. What we know as psychologists, this has been a huge advance in the last 50 years, is how much of the mind's work is happening outside of our awareness, that there's actually a shocking amount that our mind is doing all the time. Imagine in any given moment, like right now, like in that quick little second, one estimate is that there's 11 million pieces of information coming into our mind in that brief moment, but only 40 of them are being processed consciously. So that means 11 million minus 40. That's a whole lot of work that's happening basically on autopilot in low power mode in our brains. And what that means is that the brain is relying on a lot of shortcuts to do its work. Like, how else could it handle 11 million pieces of information every moment? There's shortcuts. And one of those shortcuts is that the mind clusters things together. It makes associations. And for example, if I say peanut butter, you might say jelly in response. And that's a really common association that if you were raised in the US, it's an association that you probably don't remember how it came to be in your mind. But now we can tell how tightly associated peanut butter and jelly are in your mind because you're really quick in associating them. Like if I say it, peanut butter and then jelly comes right behind it. That quickness of association reveals that there's this shortcut in how the brain is storing information. So those shortcuts that serve us very well, that allow us to do a whole bunch of things without thinking too hard about it, to we can read and we can drive and we can have a conversation while we're cooking. We can do a lot of things at once, but it also means that sometimes we're doing things we don't realize we're doing. Those shortcuts are causing problems. And that comes from all the stuff in our environment around us. Dr. Beverly Daniel Tatum calls it the smog, which is a tough reference to make given the air quality situation in California. But it's actually sort of visceral when you think about it, that sometimes we're breathing in smog and we can feel it and we can see it. And other times it's invisible, but it's still there coming in. And the smog in this case is all the little associations since the moment we were born that associated women as being in certain roles or Black people as having certain associations. And it could be from our parents. It could be from our media, our school, our books, our things we just see in the world around us. Those associations have formed that smog that has become our associations or our unconscious biases.
So when, say, a white person says about people of color, I don't see color. It's all, you know, people are all the same to me. I don't see color. That's not true, right? I mean, even if they're not acknowledging it consciously, their brain is seeing a person of color.
Right. So there's a couple of ways to tackle that one. I mean, one, my favorite is someone once said to me, an African-American person said to me, you know, I've noticed that when people say I don't see color, they only say it to Black people, which is sort of meta. But breaking that down a little bit, yes. So we know work that's been done by psychologists shows that we perceive three things fairly quickly when we meet someone. We perceive their age, their gender, and their race sort of at some level instantaneously. And that information, I think what people mean when they say, I don't see color, is they want to say, I don't use that information in inappropriate ways. That's the intention behind that statement. But the impact of that statement is actually quite the opposite. Studies by Mike Norton and his colleagues have shown that when a white person does not describe a Black person using their race when it would be a relevant piece of information in a conversation, they're actually trusted less, not more. That color blindness is actually held against them. And I think in my book, I interviewed someone on this topic, and she said, you know, it's as if you're saying there's something wrong with seeing that I'm Black, that there's something to be ashamed of or not seen in my Blackness. And you could fill in brownness or other racial or ethnic identities as well. So yeah, color blindness is one of those narratives in the United States that a lot of really well-meaning people have adopted, not realizing that it's actually having the opposite impact.
Now, the socialization that we are immersed in the United States, a lot of it has to do with pop culture, the media that we consume. And in recent years, Hollywood has come under fire for being too white. You know, it's essentially an industry that unfortunately a lot of the decision-making still is being done by disproportionately white men. You see that in the awards that are award nominations and the awards that are given out, although that's appears to be, you know, changing bit by bit. And people of color in the industry were told over and over again, and audiences were told that it's all purely about economics, that it's only, you know, that mostly white leads in films are the ones that make money, and that's all that Hollywood was following. But we know now through evidence, through films like, you know, Black Panther and others, that the opposite is true. How much responsibility does our media, our culture, our films play in socializing us to basically be subconsciously white supremacist?
Yeah, the media is playing a really powerful role. Storytelling plays a powerful role, storytelling of all forms. And when we say media, we mean the whole wide spectrum of media, even including news, even before the era of fake news, just the idea of local news. There's been media scholars who have shown how in local news, the Black men as perpetrators are overrepresented in the what's actually shown on television versus what actual Department of Justice reports say the crime rates are in those areas, and that there's the language being used, the visuals being used are also particularly fear-based. So everything from our news to our movies, Stacey Smith and her team have done really in-depth analysis of our films and TVs and the top 100 movies. And the statistics are startling. Something like 50 out of 100 of the top 100 movies had zero Black characters with speaking parts, something like that in that ballpark. And some similarly startling statistics about other people of color and about women. So the media is absolutely pattern matching against history, which history is not the right thing to be pattern matching against right now. There's obviously huge opportunity as Black Panther and Crazy Rich Asians and Wonder Woman are evidence of. I'll also add that those of us who don't work in the media industry, I don't work in the media industry, but we can do a little bit of our part too here. And really, and I talk about this in my book of playing a really active role in knowing which, whatever media we're most interested in, movies, podcasts, books, music, being attuned to which ones are coming out and when, because the early financial results, if it's a movie, for example, opening weekend, if it's a book, pre-orders, are really critical in sending signals to the financial decision makers that this is a viable right. project. And so we can really try to do our part in engaging with that work as early as possible.
Let's talk about the ways in which those people who might be convinced through taking a test that indeed they're more racist than they realized want to actually do something about it. What would they do? Doesn't addressing implicit bias involve deep self-examination and indeed examination about the privileges that we have that we sometimes don't think about because we all want to think of ourselves as having deserved everything that we've worked to get.
Absolutely. And that's certainly a human instinct that I share as well. There's a few things here. We don't, as scientists, have the magic solution on how to de-bias ourselves. I mean, that's unfortunately just many psychologists are trying and we have yet to crack the nut on that. But that doesn't mean that there isn't work to be done. Certainly, one of the things I really emphasize in my book is the importance of a growth mindset. And that's work that Carol Dweck and other psychologists have done that shows that when you think of yourself as a work in progress, you're more likely to learn from your mistakes. When you think of yourself as sort of already having figured something out, and in this country, we often do think about ourselves on diversity and inclusion as this is something we should know how to do. We are not works in progress. We're a bad person if we show any racism or sexism. But the unconscious bias research says that that's an unrealistic expectation. We have to know that we are going to make mistakes, and when we make them, have that growth mindset, that belief that we can get better. So my argument has been that by clinging to this good person identity where there's no room for mistakes and no room for growth, we're actually getting in the way of being better people, that we want to try to be goodish people, I'm calling it. And to be very clear, crystal clear on this, goodish, being a goodish person is not a lower standard. It's a higher standard than being a good person. Because when you're a good person and you screw up and you step in it, and God knows I do this a lot, I'm a professor and I'll mix up two students of the same race who look nothing alike for each other in front of the entire class. I mean, really kind of humiliating stuff.
Well, thank you for admitting that. That's hard to admit, right? And we've all done it, unfortunately.
So many, Sonali. I know.
We've all done it. I've done it. I'll admit it.
That's right. And so in those moments, the question is, what do we do next? What can we do to grow from that? Or are we just going to kind of go into the red zone of defensiveness and like pretend it never happened? As a goodish person, it's a higher standard because you got to own the mistake and grow from it. And so awareness of implicit biases has to come in a growth mindset, because in a fixed mindset, we're still not going to make the improvements we want to make. I'll add one more thing to this, to your point about you're alluding to, I think, systemic bias. Even if we could, if we had that magic solution to make unconscious biases go away, and I could take even conscious biases and wipe that out as well, we would still have systemic bias baked into a lot of our processes and structures in society. So we'd still have plenty of work to do. So it requires us to think about everything from what's the smog we're taking in, to what are the systems and processes that we use to hire people, to promote people, to welcome people into our neighborhoods, to have parent-teacher engagement at schools. Like, these are all places in which systemic bias can show up.
Yeah, and I should really say, you know, as a brown person, those of us who are neither black nor white, all, you know, tend to fall into this category where sometimes there's a battle between what can we also be racist, and absolutely, especially anti-black racism is pervasive among Asian communities, whether we want to admit it or not. It is. Around Latino communities, it's there. There is anti-black racism. There is racism against, you know, other groups. Sometimes there's racism against a different community from the country of your own origin. And I've seen that in my family, my community as well. So these are certainly complicated questions. And I'm wondering, so whether the book that you've written, I'm sure it has been years in the making, but we live in a time today where, unfortunately, it's becoming okay to be overtly racist now. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that, that we are at this bizarre and really disturbing political moment where implicit bias, implicit racism, the subtle racist aggressions that take place are not as shocking as the fact that there are people that are just overtly racist. We have neo-Nazi groups and white supremacist groups openly talking about the superiority of the white race, and politicians pandering to them. I mean, that's a scary moment.
It really is. But here's what's so stunning about it, and it actually is really critical to understanding this whole good person identity that we all cling to. Meaning even those of us who aren't in that group you just described. If you read the writings of white nationalists and white supremacists and neo-Nazis, they see themselves as good people.
Yeah.
They really do. They truly believe it. And there's a fascinating book that just came out. I probably shouldn't be plugging other books, but this is a really good book that I recommend, called Rising Out of Hatred, by Pulitzer Prize winner Eli Saslow, and it chronicles the conversion of Derek Black, who was the rising star of the white nationalists. He is David Duke's godson, and he was going to be the leader of this new generation. And he's abandoned it and become an anti-racist himself. And when you read this book, you really get a peek into how he was raised, how he was schooled, and what he was led to believe. And it's very much entrenched in, we are doing the right thing. This is moral. This is good. So I say that to say, we are really addicted to seeing ourselves as good people, no matter who we are or what we believe. We see ourselves that way. There's the research on moral identity, as it's called, confirms that. What that means is that for all of us, white nationalists and the rest of us, that growth mindset, that goodish perspective, is going to be critical. It's the only way we can move forward, because whether it's with our unconscious biases or our conscious biases, it's the only way we can move forward, because we have to see ourselves as good people. We're very addicted to that identity.
Hmm. Thankfully. well, I want to thank you so much, Dolly, for joining us. Are there some online tools that you can suggest for people? I mean, of course, certainly encourage them to get a copy of your book, The Person You Mean to Be, How Good People Fight Bias. But the Harvard Implicit Bias Test, I'm sure you said it was available online. Any other things you can suggest?
Yeah, there's some videos on my website, which is dollychug.com. I think they're under media, some New York Times videos that are about 2 minutes long. They've done a really wonderful job making these ideas come to life. So I think there's a series of seven, so it's a total of about 14 minutes in 2 minute chunks. I really recommend those as well.
Great. We'll post a link to your website, dollychug.com. Chug is spelled C-H-U-G-H .com. Thank you so much and good luck to you with the book.
Oh, Sonali, thank you so much for having me and for the work you do.
My guest has been Dolly Chug. She is a Harvard-educated, award-winning social psychologist at the New York University Stern School of Business, where she's an expert in the unconscious biases and unethical behavior of ordinary people. We've been discussing her new book, The Person You Mean to Be, How Good People Fight Bias. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo.